Good evening, everyone. You're listening to Confis Radio, brought to you by Confis Global Community Film Festival. I'm your host for this evening, Sandy DeFreitas. With us this evening, we have the extraordinary Vivian Mewlin. And just before I give you a description of her, I just want to let you know that intro music is by Donna Greenberg from her album Song in the Wind. Now, Vivian Mewlin, as a teenage actress, Vivian was elected the VP of Northern British Equity. When she first came to Canada, she worked as a stage manager for the Dora Maver Moore, subsequently ran two theatre businesses, Vivian Stenson Concerts and Vivian Stenson Publicity, both of which she continued in New York from 1962 to 72. She returned to Toronto as AGO's Communications Director and then on to Factory Theatre, Toronto Free, and Passé Muriel. She won a Dora as producer of Indigo, served on the boards of the Performing Arts Publicists Association and of Performing Arts Lodges, where she became a resident in 1999, and has served since at every PAL board level. Vivian also is the chair of Scrabble with the Stars fundraising committee. So you see, we have a very eclectic young lady with us tonight. Hello, Vivian.
Hello. How are you?
Good. So Vivian, tell me, what brought you to Canada?
Actually, I came to Canada on my first ill-fated marriage. I met somebody who'd followed me around in London, pretending that he liked everything I liked, and I married him. I thought it was good to come here because my father had sisters here, so it wasn't like coming to somewhere where I had no family. And by the time I got here, I found that he didn't really have the same kind of life as I did, and therefore I had to start all over again.
So what was the first thing you did?
Well, I did act when I first came here in some of the radio things. You know, CBC was there, but that wasn't enough really to keep you going. So I went to the University of Toronto Night School and studied advertising and publicity, because those were similar to what I'd done as a stage manager. And that brought me to a stage where I was able to do things like publicity on various things, which kept me going in between the jobs I did as stage manager for the Dora Maver Moore company and similar companies, which was spotty always. You never knew that you could make a living. So the publicity helped me make a living at that time.
And
in my early 20s.
In your early 20s. And as a publicist, is that correct?
I was a publicist. And, well, at first I was just a publicist and a copywriter, too. I found that whatever I could put my hand to, I would make a living at so that I could act in between and do stage management, which I was very anxious to keep up because I'd got to stage management as a means to an end. I'd wanted to direct and produce plays, and that's how it started. And then, while I was performing on CBC, I met somebody called Edith Folk, who was a very well-known folklorist, and she had a series, it was a concert series. No, it wasn't. It was a folklore series on CBC. And I helped her translate some of the folk songs from other languages. And she said to me one day, "Vivian, it's such a pity that nobody will bring the Weavers here. And they've just got together again after having been blacklisted in the States." And I said, "Well, I'll do it." So I did. I brought them to Massey Hall. And if you go to Massey Hall, you'll see that there's a poster there in the basement of Massey Hall that is of my Weavers concert. And that began me a new career as an impresario. I brought all kinds of jazz and folk. I was the only one doing jazz and folk. There were other people doing classical music. But throughout the rest of the 50s, that's what I did.
Now, for those of us who are not familiar with the Weavers, tell us who they are. They're a folk group.
It was a folk group, and the one of them that you will know best, I'm sure, not because he's always around, is Pete Seeger. Pete Seeger was the one who he's in his 90s now, but many of his songs are sung by Peter, Paul, and Mary and various other people. And he was blacklisted, along with the Weavers, because of his left-wing ideas. And now he's since had the big award at Lincoln Center, and now they think of him as a very important part of the American music history. But he came there a long way. He came through the fire to get there. And that really was the start of my profession as an impresario. I brought in Kingston Trio and Duke Ellington and a lot of people from various kinds of
Julian
music.
Bream.
Julian Bream, he was one of the closer to classic that I brought. And even Betty Davis to the Royal Alec in a play that she was playing in, she and her then husband. And those were quite interesting days for me until how it happened. Do you want to hear how I got to New York?
Absolutely.
Well, I brought the Royal Welsh Male Voice Choir to...
Sorry?
The Royal Welsh Male Voice Choir to Massey Hall. Massey Hall is where I did most of my concerts.
And you're from Wales.
That's how I came to do it, because I was from Wales. And I managed to arrange a tour for the choir all over the United States and started them off in Toronto. And it so happened that that was a time when the... What was it called? It was with Richard Burton, and it was the opening of that big theater on Front Street. Opened.
The O'Keeffe.
It was the O'Keeffe Center, and Richard Burton was starring in Camelot. And it so happened that his uncle was in the choir that I was bringing in. So, of course, we did publicity for the uncle in Richard's dressing room. I had them singing together. And the rumor went round that Richard Burton was going to be at the reception after the concerts, which brought a whole lot of people who weren't supposed to be there trying to get in. And in trying to keep them out, I worked very hard with the manager of that restaurant that we'd had the reception in after the Royal Welsh Male Voice Choir concert. And after it was all over, I sat on the floor in his office and drank a glass of wine, and he offered to see me home. And he was on his way to New York. So I married him and went to New York with him. And that was all because Richard Burton happened to be the uncle of somebody in the choir. That's been the story of my life. One thing has always led to another.
Some man's involved there somewhere. And so, now, in New York, did you go back into theater there?
I didn't actually go into theater. I did run a theater. I ran a children's theater in the village. It was something that people could bring their children to on Saturday afternoons, and they could go and do their shopping or whatever and leave the children with us, and we entertained them at one of the restaurants.
How did that come about?
I knew somebody in Ottawa who I'd worked with in Ottawa whose brother-in-law was running that theater and looking for somebody else to take it over from him, and I did. Mm-hmm. So that's how that came about. And at the same time, I managed to get myself a job as creative director for a big international company there. So even though theatre, again, didn't bring me in very much money. I was able to make a very good living and still do theatre. That worked for many years.
So basically you were not making money on stage, but behind the scenes in theatre.
Right.
Ah, big difference there.
Right. I really had wanted to be behind the scenes. I decided way back when I was a teenager, when I became 20, I thought to myself, acting is a cop-out. You go on stage and you become that character and you're not yourself anymore.
You dissolve.
You become that person and you can get away from all the troubles in your life by being the character that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's a cop-out. I want to experience everything in my life. I want to be me. I want to feel everything. I want to experience everything. So that's why I went back to drama school and studied direction and was a stage manager when I first came here. That's was my way up out of actually acting. Though in later years, and we don't have to talk too much about this, but in later years, somehow or other, I found that in my 80s, I'm often called upon to act again. Isn't that funny?
Well, that's the way it goes.
Yep.
What goes around?
Yes, it comes around, yes.
Now, you then came back to TO, but before you did that, you became a director of the National Roosevelt Day.
Yes, that happened. That happened because, again, I told you how things seem to, one thing comes out of another.
Mm-hmm.
I took a year off when my second child was born. And, of course, being me, I became president of the Parent Teachers Association in Queens and found myself making a presentation to the Queens School Board because they wanted to take away our vice principal.
The Queens School Board, is that in Queens?
In Queens, in New York. And that's where we lived. Everybody who had children went to live in Queens. Oh, not everybody, but a lot of us who lived in the village before we had children moved to Queens, to this particular area, which was quite a fun area. And I went to this school board meeting and told them why they shouldn't take away our vice principal. And the next thing I knew, I got a call from Americans for Democratic Action saying, we hear what a good job you do talking, and would you like to be part of what we're doing and honor President Roosevelt's memory and raise money for Americans for Democratic Action? So that's how that came about. And from that, something else came about, because I've been doing that for a few years, and I got a call from Washington, from Ambassador Dodd, saying, we're told you're doing a good job on National Roosevelt Day.
Mm-hmm.
How would you like to be executive director of a new fundraiser we're doing to give awards in memory of Reinhold Niebuhr, who was I'll tell you who he was. He was the one who wrote that that piece that the old people who are trying to avoid being drunk anymore say.
Mm-hmm.
What was that saying he had? You know, the one that the drunk people use to.
I'm not quite sure, but we can come back to that.
All right. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, he was a very famous man, and I took that over. And from there, I got a call.
One of the people you were giving the water was Cesar Chavez?
Well, yes, we gave one to him, and we gave one to German chancellor then, Willy Brandt, who was being a very honorable gentleman. And people like that got all kinds of awards, and it was all over the world, and I worked through the United Nations on that, so that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did you get involved with the United Nations?
Only through phoning them up and saying, could we talk about Willy Brandt getting the award,
and that led to you working with them.
What I found about New York was it was very easy to work there, much, much easier than it has been in Toronto.
And why do you think that is?
Because everybody's adrenaline is up, and they're open to ideas. And if you have ideas, they pick them up. Here's how I always talk about it. I always say that in New York, people would come to me and say, I'd like you to do such and such a thing. And I'd say, now that's interesting. I've never done anything like that before. And they'd say, ah, but you can. And then when I came to Toronto, people would say to me, well, we need such and such a thing down there. And I'd say, well, here's how I would do that. And they'd say, well, you've never done anything quite like that before. We better think about it.
Right.
It's a totally different...
mindset.
Right.
Do you have any idea why this mindset of stalling occurs here more than in New York?
I would say that in New York, everybody has their adrenaline up. All the people, all the doers.
There must be a reason. Adrenaline only goes up if you're in...
But there's an atmosphere there of doing.
Yeah.
And they're looking out. Everybody feels that somehow or other things can be used to make things happen.
So it's about confidence, really.
I think it's confidence.
Yeah.
I think probably you're right. I never thought of it that way, but you're probably right.
Because, you know, I hear that same story even today.
Mm-hmm.
When people go abroad or they go to New York, they feel like they're pumped up, ready to go, and they can get more accomplished. And as soon as they come back here, a week or two goes by and everything becomes deflated. It's hard to get things moving.
Well, it isn't so much it becomes deflated. It's that you've got to become more devious. You have to think of ways. You've got to try to think your way into their minds and think, how can I persuade them to do this? You can't just present your idea, usually.
Or you have to convince them it's their idea.
That's right. That's another good way of doing it. No, I never feel very good about that. I like to present things that I do myself.
I'm just reminding the listeners that we are here listening to Confess Radio, brought to you by Confess Global Community Film Festival. And for those of you who are not familiar with the Confess, we run an annual event in the St. Lawrence Market neighborhood each year in September. And this year it will be held during the days of the 12th of September to the 15th. Most of the screens will be held at the St. Lawrence Markets at the Rainbow Cinema. And the awards, which is called the MADA Awards, meaning Making a Difference Awards, will be held at the St. Lawrence Center for the Arts. So we're going to go back to Vivian now. Now, Vivian, when you came back to Toronto, let's talk about the two businesses you ran, the two theaters.
You mean...
The Vivian Stenson...
That's way back. That's in the 50s.
Back in the 50s?
Yes, but when I came back, I came back for AGO, the Art Gallery of Ontario, when they were trying to... It was the first time that they enlarged themselves, you know, got this great big extra floor. And I helped them... Really, mostly from a public relations point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, that was when dinner theatre was starting in Toronto. And after I finished with the contract that I had with the art gallery, I started working for some of the smaller theatres which had blossomed during the time that I'd been in New York. That was the beginning of the homegrown theatre here, the Passmarais and Factory and all those. And that was quite exciting because they were doing Canadian work.
Tell me about your experiences at the Factory Theatre.
Well, Factory Theatre at that time was run by, well, it has been right up until now, by Ken Gass, who called it Factory Theatre because he'd started it over a factory. And he had a wonderful way of finding very special playwrights, and some of whom I've seen their work since in San Francisco or wherever I've been, but they're all Canadian, and he somehow managed to bring those people out to a stage where their work could be shown over and over. And I enjoyed working with him very much. And where he was wonderful to me, Ken Gass, who has since become president of PAL, yes, which brought him back into my life. But at that time, I got the idea that the dinner theater wasn't doing everything it should. You know that it was there, but it was, well, they were, let's put it this way, they were wearing clothes off the rack, or they were trying very hard to do it on a shoestring. Mm-hmm. And I was sure that I could do it on an equal shoestring and still make it more beautiful, make it, give it a little more, make it a little sharper, a little brighter, a little more, I hate to say professional, because it was professional, mm-hmm. but to give it a little more distinction. And so I had a friend here who married a woman called Salome Bay,
uh-huh.
and brought her from New York to Toronto. And the idea simmered in my mind that that might be my answer. So I went to Salome Bay and suggested that we do a musical based on the history of the blues. And she was willing to be the star of it. She'd wanted to somehow bring her wonderful voice to Canada.
And she had an amazing voice.
And she had an amazing voice. And so we put on this dinner theater. And
Indigo.
It was Indigo. Actually, I had to fight with Salome. That was possibly the only fight I had with her. She'd wanted to call it In and Out of the Blues, and I was determined to call it something that my advertising and publicity mind told me would be more readily remembered. So I called it Indigo, because
mm-hmm.
everybody knew Duke Ellington's mood Indigo. It was
why that word Indigo?
Blues. It was a blue. It was the history of the blues.
Okay.
And Indigo is blue, right?
Okay.
So that's how it came to be. And I was very fortunate that that was the first year that Dora Awards, named for Dora Maver Moore, who I'd worked for when I first came here, the Dora Awards were just about to start. And we won, I won it first as the producer, and my star, Salome Bay, won it as the best musical performer.
And that was the first Dora Awards?
The very first Dora Awards.
How many years ago was that?
I think it's 32 years now, because the 25th anniversary, they called me back to be a presenter because I'd won the first time.
And that was when?
Oh, about 4 years ago, I think.
Really? Mm. And the Dora Awards is now presented here in the St. Lawrence Market now, at the St. Lawrence Centre for the Arts, isn't it? Or has it?
I think
2 years ago at least.
It's at various theatres.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, it's a bigger one. It's been at Prince of Wales Theatre and Princess of Wales Theatre and other theatres around here. But it's a big event, usually. And it's a development in Toronto theatre life. Mm-hmm. We've now grown up.
Right. Now, in your career as a publicist,
mm-hmm.
were there any major movies or productions that we know of that you worked on? Outside of the ones we mentioned.
As a publicist, I don't think so. I did the publicity on all my own shows in the 50s. When I went to New York, I was with a company that had several different fashion divisions, and I created a magazine there that went all over the United States to the people who were selling those goods in various well-known stores.
Does the magazine still exist?
No, it died with me when I left it. No, whoever did it, it was called Style. And whoever took it over, it went on for a few years, but gradually met its demise. But then when I came back, I should go back to the days in the 50s when I did have them. Well, among the things that did publicity for was the Art Directors Club of Toronto, which I did work for many major artists. People who painted and did sculpture and things of that nature.
Do you know the names of them?
Yes. Now, for instance, perhaps the most famous of them is Michael Snow.
Uh-huh.
And when I went to live in New York, Michael Snow and his then wife, Joyce Whelan, who has now passed away, they had a studio in New York. They were in New York the same time as I was. And I did the publicity on Michael's first film exhibition at the Museum of Modern Art. And that was funny. Remember we talked about how it's more difficult in Toronto
right.
than in New York?
Right.
Well, Michael Michael's gallery owner here in Toronto, his agent in Toronto, asked me to cover all the things that Michael was doing in New York, his first big events in New York, here in Toronto, his film things, the Walking Woman, who was later became his landmark all over the city, and I think there were several of them in the Art Gallery of Ontario. So I came here and I talked to CBC and I talked to the newspapers. Nobody was interested. They said, no, he's too far out. He's too eclectic. And I had to actually go to the Ombudsman of the Star to get Michael's work mentioned here. Well, in New York, they were lauding him,
amazing.
This Canadian. This is the kind of thing that... This is the kind of thing that I meant by the fact of how much harder it is here.
And you wonder why so many of our Canadian artists are in the U.S., flourishing and making a big name for themselves mm-hmm. there as opposed to being here.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of work on people like that, like Michael and Joyce Whelan when she did her performances, not too much on big theatre names. I did people like Duke Ellington when they brought him here and other people of that ilk, but
you had a special relationship with Duke Ellington, is that right? In some kind of family matter?
Well, yes, his sister married my father's cousin, so his nephews are my cousins, and so he was family. And to be his family meant that you had his loyalty at all times.
Was it easy working with him, especially with his family?
Well, I'll give you an example. When I brought him to Massey Hall, I had gone the regular route through the agency that, you know, and his manager, and signed a contract and paid a deposit down, which as you usually did with big names in those days. I don't know quite how it's done now, but those days you paid a deposit, which was the minimum that they would accept, against a percentage of the gate.
The fee, yeah.
And of the gate, against the percentage of what you brought in. In other words, they were entitled to 60% of the gate, of the amount of money that
was brought in.
Was brought in. And of course, he filled the house, and I made far more than the minimum that I'd given in advance. And so I went with a check and said, and the man, he said to the manager, no, you don't. Give her back the check. She's family. I'm not taking any more.
Wow. Well, that was so, family back then. I don't know about family today. They're not quite the same anymore.
He would be the same at any time.
He would be, yeah.
He's that kind, was that kind of person.
So you've worked on an awful lot. You've met a lot of well-known people. What project are you currently working on today?
Well, now I'm now 86 years of age.
86 years young.
Of age, because now I can be, you know, it's wonderful being in my 80s. The 80s are wonderful. They give you a freedom.
They do?
Oh, yes, I can flirt.
Yes, well, I know
nobody
that.
I can do what, I can say things, I can do things, I can be perfectly honest. I don't have to watch my tongue quite as much as I might have done. I don't curse very much, though. That's not really part of me. But other things I do, and among the things that have happened, now 9 years ago, I started something which used one of my delights and part of my wishes to be of service. I had, about 15 years ago, I started playing Scrabble intensely. I joined the Toronto Scrabble Club. I played Scrabble in tournaments all over the world, which I've loved, and it's brought a whole lot of wonderful people into my life, and it's been very good for my thinking, for my mind. And I came to live at Performing Arts Lodge, which is a place for people who live, who are in the theatre, mostly older people who are in the theatre, and not just theatre, but any
all
form, or any performing arts discipline. It could be a cameraman or whatever. And I soon went on the board, soon after I came there, and I found that they didn't have a major way of raising money as a charity. And I put together my
proposal.
Well, I put together my beloved Scrabble with the fact that here we could put forth something that would appeal to performers. And I made Scrabble with the Stars. And the first 2 years it was in PAL, in their little green room, about 100 people was all, 150 is all it has. And after 2 years it grew and grew and grew. And now, for the last 3 years, we've been in the very, very big, we were in the in Arcadian Court the first year. Now we're in the Arcadian Loft, which is even bigger. And we have about 45 performers, well-known performers, people who are stars. Oh, people like, for example, Michael Balkan has been there. This year, Colin Mochrie and Deborah McGrath, who you know from the Little Mosque on the Prairies. There's a whole lot of wonderful performers.
And Colin Mochrie was from that show, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Whose Line Is It Anyway? As a matter of fact, he also did, not only that one, he did things about anyway, he's been a very big name.
Right
over the world, to such an extent that that somebody who I play Scrabble with, who lives in New Zealand, when she found out that I had Colin Mochrie coming, she said, could you get his autograph for my son? He thinks he's wonderful.
And he's kind of known as a comic genius, isn't he?
He's a comic genius, yes. And there are lots of these stars of the Canadian theatre that come there. You know, now when as you stand here talking, when you're my age, the names come back to you 5 minutes later. And that's what's happening to me at the moment.
It happens to me, never mind.
Gordon Pinsent. Has been there all the time. It's one of them that's been there all the time. He's in all kinds of films and he's on all kinds of TV all the time. And Gordon is part of another part of Scrabble with the Stars. Scrabble with the Stars is something in which we bring these 40, 45 people who are known to play Scrabble and eat their dinner with people who've support us, with sponsors who will pay $5,000 or whatever to play Scrabble and to dine with these stars. And also, we have, after we've got all those in, we sell single tickets for individuals who'd like to come and,
now,
and do it.
What I wanted to ask you, because fundraising is not an easy thing.
No.
It's very difficult, you know, even to raise $300 is difficult. So basically, Scrabble the Stars, you have about 45 well-known people, actors and so forth that are Canadian, and they convene in a location,
glamorous occasion.
It's a glamorous occasion where people pay to sit at their table and play Scrabble. Is that correct?
Yes, they have dinner with them as well, so they can chat with them during that time. Then they play Scrabble with them, and there's all kinds of prizes that can be won. And all kinds of things have been built around this as it's grown through the years. For example, one of the world Scrabble champions who lives in Montreal, and the North American the highest ranking woman in North America, we auction off their services for about $1,000 each and make a little more money. And that brings the Scrabble into it a little bit more and also makes us some more money. So there are all kinds of different ways, exciting things that can happen. And one of the things that happened as a side thing is that one of the performers said, look, how about having an art exhibition of work by people who are celebrities and who paint. She said, I paint, Gordon Pinson paints, Charlie Packner paints. And so that's what we started to do. So now as you come in, you have the opportunity to buy a painting, well, to a silent auction at which you can possibly buy a painting by somebody quite famous. There's all kinds of ways in which things that I do grow to be bigger and bigger. But a lot of people do that, and some people come who just want to be among the stars and to play a little Scrabble with them, and they just buy one ticket and enjoy the things that are happening. You know, Ron James is coming, for example, this year, one of the stars. And what is he doing? He's going to offer that if people will buy him at an auction, he will come to their apartment and cook dinner for them.
Wow.
Now, so these are the way that the performers become very excited about helping PAL. Mm. And PAL, as you know, I don't know whether your listeners know, but PAL is the place where older people and in the various performing arts can spend the rest of their lives among their own, instead of having to be in places where they have to give up their funny little quirky ways of life that
we
have.
And at the same time, it still engages them in their craft.
That's right. That's right. So that's one of the things that I'm doing. Although now, luckily, another wonderful person, Kate Barris, has taken over the management of being the director of that, which gives me time to do other things.
And so when does Scrabble the Stars take place this year?
It takes place this year on the 6th of May. That's a Monday. That's a week and a day from now.
Oh,
so that's how busy we're getting. And people can find out about it on the website. It's scrabblewiththestars.ca.
Okay. And are you still hands-on with Scrabble with the Stars?
I'm still hands-on, even though I'm not the main person now, thank goodness. But I'm still hands-on, and I still do. I'm My main job now with it is to persuade as many celebrities as possible to take part in it.
Now,
and I do.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. You know enough of them.
Yes,
so,
thank goodness.
The event, if somebody wants to participate in Scrabble the Stars, mm-hmm. is it a possibility for the average person to do so? Or is it more of a select group of people?
Oh, no, 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 no. Anybody who can afford to pay a little amount that you pay to go to any
ticketed event.
Any ticketed event, really, in the city. It's $150 for an individual.
And so basically, once you pay that, you can attend. Do you get to play at the table?
There are three individuals at a table plus one star. There's a star for every three people.
Right.
And but if you buy a single ticket, if you come as two people together, if you come at the very last minute, we can't necessarily guarantee that you'll sit with somebody you know.
And so how much are people willing to pay to sit with these stars? An average.
Well, I can't tell you. We don't charge anybody for a single ticket more than $150.
Right.
You can buy a table, a non-commercial table, for $500,
mm-hmm.
and then three of you can sit, three friends can sit with him. But beyond that, we've got people, we've got very, very many sponsors who pay, say, $7,500 or $5,000. People like Scotia Bank, for example. And Scotia Bank not only does that, they not only come as a big sponsor, but they also give us a whole lot of volunteers who come and help us look after it. They think so highly of what we're doing.
That's amazing.
So,
and Scrabble the Stars.
And that's year after year. Yeah. That's not just the 1 year.
Is it taking place in other locations, or is it only once a year at this particular location?
It's once a year at this one location. And believe me, it's an important happening for Powell. It really helps us look after the people who become too sick to really look after themselves in their own apartment.
And for example, it also takes care of the ill. And what else does it do? I think you're able to bring in a special assistant in some way to look after these people.
Well, we did that for 5 years ago. 5 or 6 years ago, we brought in somebody who would be able to help people find their way around the very difficult job of finding nursing care and finding how to look after themselves, finding ways of getting to hospital if they weren't feeling well, and finding out how to look after themselves. So we have somebody at Performing Arts Lodge who does that. But now, beyond that, we're trying very hard to have an extra building where people who can't keep up their own apartments can be looked after.
Well, you know, Vivian, you're just amazing. It has been a real great pleasure speaking to you. I want to remind the listeners, you've been listening to Confest Radio, brought to you by Confest Global Community Film Festival. And it's been so exciting talking to Vivian Mullen. So look out and go to the website scrabble.ca to learn more about Scrabble with the Stars, which takes place May 6th at the Arcadian. That's the Yonge and Queen, isn't it?
It's right on the corner of on the corner of Queen and Bay, the Simpson Tower.
Great. Thank you all for listening, and thank you, Vivian.
Thank you.